Imagine buying like two full tanks of gas for your car,
Yeah.
right? But your fuel line is so incredibly rusted that an entire tank just pours out onto the highway while you drive.
Oh, that would be a nightmare.
Right. And now imagine your dashboard doesn't even have a fuel gauge. So, you only realize what's happening when the engine just sputters and dies in the middle of nowhere.
I mean, that sounds completely insane.
It sounds insane, but right now in South Africa, nearly 50% of fully treated, perfectly safe municipal water is effectively being dumped into the dirt before it reaches a single tap.
Yeah, it's a staggering reality.
It really is. So if you're joining us for this deep dive, we're digging into a stack of research on innovations in South African water management and infrastructure resilience. And we're specifically highlighting the work of this engineering firm, Resolve.
Which is such a critical topic right now.
Absolutely. The mission today is to figure out how cutting-edge technology is being deployed to solve this catastrophic infrastructure failure and, what that blueprint actually means for global resilience.
The stakes in this specific environment, well, they really cannot be overstated. I mean, South Africa receives about 464 millimeters of rainfall annually.
Which is not a lot, right?
No, it's roughly half the global average. So you are looking at a fundamentally water-scarce geography, and on top of that, 98% of their surface water resources are already heavily allocated.
Wow. Allocated to what mostly?
To agriculture, heavy industry, and expanding urban centers, the margin for error there is effectively zero. Every single drop of fresh water is spoken for before it even hits the ground.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because knowing that context makes the statistic I just mentioned completely terrifying.
Oh, definitely.
According to the most recent National Water Balance, 47.4% of municipal water is classified as non-revenue water.
Right, non-revenue water.
Yeah, meaning almost half of the water that utilities spend millions to, like pump, filter, treat, and push into the network, is just lost. It's lost to physical leaks, unauthorized siphoning, or outright billing failures.
Which, forces a major paradigm shift in how we view the crisis. When you lose nearly half your product in transit, you are no longer just dealing with a resource problem.
Right, because just getting more rain doesn't fix a leaky bucket.
Exactly. Praying for heavier rainfall won't fix a broken pipe. It is fundamentally a system problem. The physical and digital infrastructure meant to manage the resource has basically collapsed under the weight of age, deferred maintenance, and just poor visibility.
It's like going grocery shopping and dumping half your bags in the parking lot before you even get to your kitchen. So if the water is essentially disappearing underground, and utilities don't even know it's gone until the reservoir runs dry, how do you even begin to find the leaks?
Well, you need the network itself to tell you it's bleeding.
Right, because we can't just send guys out in trucks looking for mysterious puddles on the sidewalk.
No, that old way of managing this, a municipal worker with a clipboard reading a dial on the side of a house once a month, that is not going to cut it anymore.
Is this where the push for smart metering comes in?
Yeah, exactly. That old clipboard method is the equivalent of checking your bank account balance by waiting for a paper statement in the mail. The transition to advanced metering infrastructure, or AMI, changes the entire operational dynamic.
So what makes AMI so different from the old meters?
The core technological upgrade with AMI is continuous two-way communication. A conventional meter just sits there passively, right? Mechanically spinning numbers. An AMI deployment features digital meters that communicate granular consumption and pressure data back to a central control room in real time.
And they can receive commands from that control room too,
Yeah,
right?
exactly.
Yeah. The research highlights a specific piece of hardware deployed locally called the Utilimeter, developed by the Micromega Group. And looking at its capabilities, it does a lot more than just count liters.
Oh, it's a massive leap forward.
Yeah, it offers both prepaid and postpaid functionality, which I guess is crucial for revenue collection. But the major thing is its onboard tamper detection and real-time leak alerts. Plus, it has a built-in mechanism to remotely restrict the water supply.
And that remote restriction is a game changer. Think about it. If a localized smart meter detects a highly anomalous spike in water flow at like 3 in the morning, something that looks like a major line break or an unauthorized connection, the utility is instantly aware.
So they don't have to wait for a technician to drive out to the site 3 days later just to manually close a valve.
Precisely. The system can actuate an internal mechanism to restrict or entirely shut off the flow immediately. It stops the loss right at the source.
Wait, I have to push back here. I'm reading this and thinking, well, this sounds fantastic for a high-tech smart city center with fiber optic cables and high-speed 5G overlapping every street corner.
Sure, yeah.
But what about rural municipalities or even deep underground vaults in urban areas? If a burst pipe happens in a zone with zero commercial cellular service, how is a smart meter transmitting this vital data back to the utility?
It's a great question.
Are they having to lay down like miles of expensive network cable just to get water meters to talk?
What's fascinating here is how the Internet of Things, or IoT, has physically bypassed the need for traditional commercial cell networks entirely. They aren't laying fiber to every water meter.
Okay, so what are they doing?
Instead, they are deploying specialized IoT communication protocols, specifically technologies like LoRaWAN.
Break down LoRaWAN for me. I see that acronym everywhere in this research.
Yeah, it stands for Long Range Wide Area Network. So traditional cellular networks like 4G or 5G are designed to carry massive amounts of data, like streaming high-definition video.
Right, which drains your battery super fast.
Exactly. It requires a lot of power and dense networks of cell towers. But water meters don't need to stream video. They are just sending tiny packets of text data, you know, a pressure reading, a flow rate, a temperature metric.
So they don't need the big 5G towers.
No. LoRaWAN operates on sub-gigahertz radio frequency bands. Because the data payload is so incredibly small, the radio waves can penetrate through concrete, deep underground, and travel amazing distances on just minimal battery power.
Wait, how far are we talking?
A single low-cost base station antenna can provide coverage across a 15 to 30 kilometer radius.
Oh, wow. So one antenna can blanket an entire rural district, picking up these tiny whispers of data from thousands of meters, completely independent of the local telecom companies.
Correct. And the batteries in these sensors can last up to 10 years because they require so little energy to transmit.
That is wild.
The source material actually notes companies like IoTDC in South Africa deploying these exact networks. They offer meter-agnostic platforms, meaning they can attach these low-power radio transmitters to legacy hardware.
So the utility doesn't necessarily have to rip out every old meter. They can just retrofit them to broadcast data back to the central hub.
Exactly. It's highly cost-effective.
And the real-world impact is a shift from complete blindness to ultra-visibility. You move from a reality where a burst pipe erodes the earth underneath a road for a week before anyone notices to a reality where a dashboard flashes red within minutes.
Right, rapid response.
But, you know, even then, getting an alert that a pipe has already exploded still means you have a massive mess to clean up and a neighborhood without water. Catching a burst pipe quickly is great, but preventing it from bursting in the first place has to be the ultimate goal, right?
Absolutely. And that requires shifting from reactive maintenance to predictive analytics.
How does that work?
Instead of waiting for a pressure drop that indicates a failure, artificial intelligence models are continuously analyzing historical flow rates, pressure fluctuations, and even ambient temperature data. They spot the hidden microscopic patterns that consistently precede a structural failure.
So the AI learns what a healthy pipe looks like in the data.
Yes. The AI learns the unique rhythm of the water network and flags when that rhythm starts to flutter days or even weeks before the pipe actually breaks.
Here's where it gets really interesting.
Mm.
Because the research details a specific application of this called AI-enabled acoustic leak detection. We are talking about literally listening to the pipes to find vulnerabilities, which just sounds like science fiction to me.
I know, but the physics behind it are remarkably elegant. When water escapes from a crack in a pipe under immense pressure, it doesn't just drip.
Right, it sprays.
Yeah, it forces its way through the fissure, creating high-frequency acoustic friction against the pipe wall. The utility attaches highly sensitive hydrophones, basically acoustic loggers, to valves along the network.
Like microphones for the pipes.
Exactly. Those loggers record the vibrations traveling through the metal or plastic. The challenge, historically, was that a busy city street has a lot of vibrations. You have trucks driving overhead, construction pumps operating.
Right. So how does this system know the difference between a high-pressure water leak and, I don't know, a garbage truck hitting a pothole?
That is where the machine learning steps in. The AI is trained on thousands of hours of audio data to isolate the specific, continuous, high-frequency hiss of a water leak. And it can filter out the low-frequency, intermittent rumble of urban background noise.
That is incredible.
It is. By analyzing the time it takes for that specific sound wave to reach different sensors along the pipe, the software can triangulate the exact location of the leak right down to the meter. Industry data shows these acoustic setups can reduce a city's water losses by up to 30%.
It makes me think of a medical analogy. Imagine a cardiologist using an incredibly advanced digital stethoscope to pinpoint one specific blocked artery.
That's a perfect comparison.
Right. Rather than a surgeon doing blanket exploratory surgery, just cracking your chest open and digging around hoping they spot the problem.
Yeah.
For municipalities managing underground infrastructure that was laid down 50 years ago and is way past its design life, you can't afford to dig up miles of highway to replace everything.
You really can't. It saves millions in civil engineering costs alone. This targeted approach lets them surgically excavate a 3-foot section of road and patch the exact point of failure.
But how do they look at all this? Like, to actually manage and visualize all these incoming data streams, the smart meters, the LoRaWAN sensors, the acoustic loggers.
Major utilities utilize SCADA systems for that.
Mm-hmm.
SCADA stands for Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition.
Okay, SCADA.
Think of it as the central nervous system of an industrial plant. It is the control architecture that takes millions of individual data points and aggregates them into a central database. That's where human operators can actually monitor and control the physical pumps and valves.
And when you integrate that SCADA nervous system with geographic information systems, basically advanced digital mapping, the research says utilities are building what are called digital twins.
Yes. A digital twin is a living virtual replica of the physical water network. Because it is fed by real-time sensor data, the virtual model behaves exactly like the real-world pipes.
Oh, so it's like a simulation.
Exactly. If an engineer wants to know what will happen to the water pressure in a residential neighborhood if they close a major valve for maintenance, they don't have to guess and risk blowing a pipe.
They just test in the twin.
They close the virtual valve in the digital twin. The software simulates the physics and might reveal that closing that valve will cause a catastrophic pressure spike 3 streets over, bursting an older pipe.
So they get to make their mistakes in a video game simulation rather than in the real world. I mean, the cost of poor infrastructure decisions is simply climbing too high to risk trial and error with actual city water supplies.
Definitely.
So, okay, we've got a system that can track the flow, predict the bursts, and model the network dynamics. But plugging the holes in a bucket only works if you actually have water to put in the bucket.
Right. You still need the resource itself.
We still have the problem of 98% of the surface water being fully allocated. How does technology extend the actual supply?
Well, in a water-scarce environment where you cannot magically conjure new rivers or build new dams, the only mathematical way to increase supply is through technology-driven wastewater reuse.
Recycling it.
Yes. You have to endlessly cycle the water you already have.
The idea of drinking treated wastewater immediately brings up the yuck factor for a lot of people. The mental hurdle of turning sewage back into tap water is massive, but the mechanical process to do it is incredibly advanced now, right?
Oh, it's state of the art. We're looking at industrial-scale membrane bioreactor systems, or MBRs, combined with reverse osmosis. This is a multi-stage physical and biological gauntlet.
Walk me through it.
In an MBR, you first use specific microorganisms to literally consume and break down the organic waste. Then you force that water through membranes with pores so microscopic that they physically block bacteria and suspended solids.
And then reverse osmosis takes it even further.
Much further. Natural osmosis is a process where water naturally flows across a membrane to balance out salt concentrations. Reverse osmosis uses immense mechanical pressure to force the pretreated wastewater through a semi-permeable membrane against that natural osmotic gradient.
Okay, so it's squeezing it through.
Exactly. The pores in an RO membrane are measured in fractions of a nanometer. Water molecules are small enough to be pushed through, but salts, heavy metals, viruses, and chemical impurities are simply too large.
So they just get left behind.
They get trapped, concentrated, and flushed away, leaving water that is often purer than what you'd pull from a natural mountain spring.
The research highlights the Ithaquini municipality, which covers Durban, as a massive success story here. Their treated water reuse program isn't just an experiment. It is actively saving millions of liters of fresh water every single day.
It's a brilliant model.
Yeah, that is millions of liters of water that doesn't need to be extracted from fragile regional dams because they are treating and recycling the municipal wastewater back into industrial circulation.
And industrial operators are aggressively adopting these technologies independently, too. Massive manufacturing plants and breweries are building closed-loop water recycling systems right on their own property.
Oh, really? Just for their own use?
Yeah. They take their industrial effluent, run it through their own reverse osmosis plants, and feed it right back into their boilers and cooling towers.
That must save them a fortune.
It drastically reduces their municipal water bills. But more importantly, it nearly eliminates their environmental compliance obligations. They aren't discharging polluted effluent back into the local rivers. They are cleaning it and using it again.
So what does this all mean? We have LoRaWAN rural networks, AI filtering out garbage truck noises to hear underground leaks, digital twins mapping entire cities, and reverse osmosis turning wastewater into pure supply.
The tech is all there.
The engineering is sound. The tech works.
Yeah.
So why is the water infrastructure in so many places still failing so spectacularly?
That is the real question. The SWAN Forum, the Smart Water Networks Forum, held a major workshop specifically on Africa's water future in 2026. And their consensus is really the key to this entire deep dive.
What do they find?
The biggest constraints in the global water sector right now are not technical. They are financial, institutional, and fiercely human.
It's the people running the machines, not the machines themselves.
Exactly. If we connect this to the bigger picture, you can drop the most sophisticated AI predictive analytics platform into a utility. But that software is useless if the utility doesn't have a capable, trained engineering team to interpret the dashboard.
Right. If no one's looking at the screen, it doesn't matter.
It's useless if there is no budget to actually dispatch a repair crew when the system flags a leak. And it is actively harmful if the institutional governance is so broken that managers simply ignore the data.
The research dives heavily into change management, which, you know, always sounds like HR corporate jargon to me.
It really does.
But here it represents a very real physical barrier. I mean, imagine a seasoned network operator who has spent 30 years diagnosing pipe pressure by physically driving to pump stations and listening to the hum of the machinery.
Right. Someone who knows the system by feel.
Exactly. And suddenly, management drops a tablet on his desk and tells him an algorithm is now dictating his maintenance schedule. The resistance to that is going to be huge. If the staff doesn't trust the data, they simply won't use the tools.
And that's why technology investments dramatically underperform. Utilities buy the flashy hardware but skip the human capacity building. This is where the engineering firm Resolve has really carved out its niche.
Because they focus on the people.
Yes. They've managed over 200 of these complex intervention projects since 2005. And they've realized that you cannot just install smart meters and walk away. They use a very deliberate four-stage approach to force the technology to actually integrate into the utility's culture.
I'm going to look closely at their four-step approach.
Yeah.
Because it feels like a mandatory roadmap for implementing any kind of complex system. Step one is the baseline assessment. And the reason you can't skip this is the danger of dirty data.
Oh, the dirty data trap is fatal for these projects.
How so?
Well, if you deploy an artificial intelligence model and feed it historical data from a network that has been leaking 40% of its water for a decade, the AI is going to learn that losing 40% of your water is the baseline.
Oh, wow. So it thinks that's normal.
Exactly. It won't flag those massive underlying leaks as anomalies because, according to its training data, that's just normal operations. Resolve mandates that utilities deeply audit and clean their existing data and physically map their real-world network before turning on the algorithms.
That makes total sense. Then step two is piloting. Instead of attempting a massive, chaotic, citywide rollout of smart meters on day one, you ring-fence one specific neighborhood or pressure zone.
Right, keep it contained.
You deploy the IoT sensors there. You let the staff train on a manageable system, prove that the leak detection actually works, and use the financial savings from that small zone to justify scaling up to the politicians holding the budget.
Which naturally moves into step three, scaling. Expanding those proven interventions outward and integrating all the new sensor data into one centralized SCADA platform.
And then what's the final step?
Finally, step four is continuous optimization. The physical environment is always degrading, you know. Pipe settle, soil shifts. The utility has to continuously use the analytics to adjust pressure valves, prioritize pipe replacements, and tweak the system.
But, you know, even if an engineering firm builds a perfect roadmap, utility managers still need a reason to follow it. The research points out that a lot of this recent investment is finally being driven by top-down government accountability, specifically the South African Department of Water and Sanitation's No-Drop program.
Yeah, regulatory frameworks like the No-Drop program are the institutional stick that makes the technological carrot work.
How does it enforce it?
It is an auditing mechanism that forces municipalities to publicly report their non-revenue water metrics. It basically names and shames failing utilities. And, crucially, it ties future funding to their ability to hit water loss reduction targets.
Getting them the wallet.
Exactly. When a municipality's budget is suddenly threatened by their leak rate, there is immediate, urgent political will to deploy acoustic sensors and smart meters.
Bringing all of this together, the cascading benefits of getting these systems right are just staggering. First and foremost, solving non-revenue water is a massive financial rescue mission.
It really is.
By using IoT and AI to find and fix leaks rapidly, utilities are suddenly billing for water that used to just seep into the soil.
Hmm.
They recover revenue that allows them to actually fund future maintenance.
They also drastically slash their daily operational costs. Predictive maintenance means you aren't paying crews cripple time to excavate a flooded street at 2 a.m.
Right.
You are scheduling a targeted repair on a Tuesday afternoon before the pipe even bursts.
And there's a critical environmental layer to this that rarely gets discussed, which is the energy water nexus. Pumping millions of gallons of water across vast geographic elevations requires a colossal amount of electricity.
Massive amounts.
It is often a municipality's single largest energy expense. If you are losing 47% of your water to leaks, you are burning coal or natural gas to pump water that no one ever uses. Fixing the pipes is one of the fastest ways to reduce a city's carbon footprint.
The physical and financial survival of these municipalities relies entirely on clawing back that lost revenue and optimizing those power loads. As the cost of LoRaWAN sensors and AI computing drops, the business case for digitalizing water networks isn't just compelling, it is an absolute necessity for survival in a climate-stressed world.
To you, listening right now, whether you are preparing for a boardroom strategy session on municipal infrastructure, looking to make your own company's manufacturing processes more sustainable, or simply trying to comprehend how human society is going to adapt to an era of resource scarcity, these South African innovations aren't just local news.
No, they're highly relevant globally.
They are the literal blueprint for global resilience.
Yeah.
The engineering to save our water exists. The true challenge is building the institutional discipline to actually implement it.
This raises an important question, though. Something crucial to consider as we look at the future of this blueprint. As we increasingly rely on advanced IoT sensors, cloud-based AI algorithms, and remote automated shutoff valves to manage our absolute most critical life-sustaining resource, how vulnerable does this highly centralized digital infrastructure become to cyber sabotage?
Oh, man.
We are utilizing brilliant technology to solve the physical leaks in our pipes, but by wiring our municipal water supply directly into the cloud, are we opening the door to catastrophic digital breaches?
That is a terrifying but entirely necessary thought to leave on. Protecting the water now means defending the network. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the invisible systems that keep your world running, and we'll catch you next time.